It's Monday, May 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the top U.S. diplomat visits Saudi Arabia to gather support for Syria peace. Even a quiet Donald Trump sparks conversation.
There is a risk of taking Zika back to your own country, and people have to make an individual risk assessment.
The Rio Olympics face the threat of Zika virus. The curious case of the solar kids in Pakistan. And put away your camera phone, that is, if Justin Bieber is around. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has sought Saudi Arabia's support in strengthening a cessation of hostilities agreement between Syrian government forces and rebels ahead of broader talks on regional crises later this week. Kerry, trying to shore up support for the shaky ceasefire in Syria, met with Saudi King Salman on Sunday, whose country has been a key supporter of rebels fighting to overthrow Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The top U.S. diplomat and his Saudi counterpart, Adel al-Jubeer, discussed developments in Syria. Kerry has moved on now to Vienna, Austria, where he and Italian Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni will co-host a ministerial meeting on security and support for Libya's new government. Western powers are hoping that Libya's government of national accord can unite the country, which has been a state of chaos since leader Muammar Gaddafi was toppled and killed in 2011. On Tuesday, the 17-nation International Syria Support Group will convene in Vienna to discuss the stalled political talks, difficulties in maintaining the February ceasefire, and the United Nations' uneven results in delivering humanitarian aid. However, the Syrian government's recent military advances may diminish the ability to restart political talks, seen as the best hope for ending the war. In Syria, the United States and Russia began stepping in to broker a series of localized ceasefires in late April to help keep a nationwide cessation of hostilities enacted in February from fraying. While the overall level of fighting between the government and rebels is down, tensions do remain between the two sides, and they have continued to flare. We turn now to what's trending online, and to do that, we have our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, right here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, the U.S. political season is coming rapidly toward convention time.
That's right.
Yeah, what's the buzz on the Nevada convention?
Well, let me start off by saying the convention wrapped up pretty quickly because they got kicked out of the venue. U.S. politicians not being classy enough for a casino. Can you believe that? This is proof that not everything that happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. The Nevada State Democratic Party announced Sunday the Paris Las Vegas Hotel security said it could no longer handle the event.
I see. And so what was the outcome of the event?
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was able to maintain her delegate advantage. She won 20 delegates to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 15 on Saturday. Before the convention, Clinton had an 18-17 lead.
Well, what's the public's reaction like so far to this?
Bernie Sanders supporters are not happy, and they're heavily criticizing the Democratic National Committee, or the DNC. They are arguing the initial vote was taken 30 minutes prior to schedule, and while the delegates were still entering the building. They're also unhappy requests for a revote were not recognized. Last but not least, they claim 64 of Sanders' delegates were disqualified without a chance to prove eligibility.
Well, are the contenders addressing the issue on social media?
Not yet. Hillary Clinton's latest tweet is about her plan to give middle-class families a raise, and Bernie Sanders tweeted about the exorbitant price people have to pay for HIV and AIDS drugs, but nothing really about the convention itself.
I see. So what is the other news that's trending?
A very unfortunate news about the environment. Nearly 90,000 gallons of oil got spilled from a pipeline belonging to Royal Dutch Shell, contaminating the Gulf of Mexico. Pictures of the contamination are making the rounds on Twitter and Facebook. Jim, back to you.
Well, thanks for the wrap-up, G. And you may tweet your questions and comments to our International Edition account. That stream is at VOA_IE. And you may also tag myself and G on the tweets. We're at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending right now in Asia. Afghan security forces push back Taliban advance on northern city. Kathmandu riot police scuffle with anti-constitution protesters. Bangladesh police arrest Islamic militant in killing of gay activists. Five face terror charges over Australia-Syria boat plan. Beijing criticizes U.S. report on China's military development. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has kept an uncharacteristically low profile this past week. That, though, has not stopped people from talking about him, as do we here in the studio with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Jim, you might have thought that with Donald Trump lying relatively low in terms of his public appearances, he just went to Capitol Hill and said absolutely nothing in public. You might think that with him lying low that there would be less, media fascination or scrutiny. And that is certainly not the case. Whether it's the cold open of the Saturday Night Live, where he's regularly impersonated, or whether it's every talk show possible. You simply cannot turn on the television in the United States without seeing Donald Trump. There is this absolute fascination with the man, and it continues no matter what he does or doesn't do.
Well, if nothing more, he has certainly incited a lot of passions, either negatively or positively. Isn't that an old Hollywood saying?
I think it was, I don't know who it was, but I do believe someone said that there is no such thing as bad media attention.
Donald Trump certainly has no shortage of that. And interestingly, that's like free publicity for him all the time. Whether that really helps him or hurts him as the campaign goes on, I mean, we got 6 months to go here. A lot can happen.
Well, certainly during the primary season, there was this long period of time where he just consumed all the political oxygen. I mean, none of his competitors in the Republican field could get any media attention whatsoever. And I don't know to what extent that explains his dominance of the field, but it certainly can't help when he dominated every single news cycle. And that is continuing today. And I think part of it is that now that he's the nominee, he's getting additional scrutiny. And there are stories that are coming out. There's a brand new story concerning his dealings with women over the years. Donald Trump has had a few things to say on Twitter about that New York Times report. But with someone becoming the presumptive nominee, you naturally expect news organizations to take a new look at someone, to dig deeper into the person's record, and that is certainly happening. But beyond that, I think you have a nation where of people who thought, well, maybe Donald Trump will be a nominee and maybe he won't, but now he is. I think that there's a certain sort of fascination with this person that a year ago no one could have imagined would be the presidential nominee of one of our two major political parties.
An interesting facet as the digging continues into Donald Trump, there have been many calls for him to release his tax returns. Now, this is not a requirement for running for president. However, it's been done pretty much by every presidential nominee for the past 40 years or so.
We certainly have no idea what could be in the tax returns until he releases them. And as you mentioned, it is sort of standard that everyone who runs for president, if they once they reach that threshold of being the nominee, that they do release their tax returns. Typically, people who have become presidential nominees have been fairly well-to-do, and many of them have business dealings or book deals or finances where, people are curious as to what their financial dealings have been. And it's considered a matter of transparency where someone is saying, I am seeking the highest office in our country, and I'm going to be transparent, and I'm going to release all of these things.
Our own VOA Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Even as scientists seek more understanding of the mosquito-borne Zika virus, there's been a call by a public health expert to postpone or relocate the Summer Olympic Games, which get underway on August in the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro. University of Ottawa Associate Professor of Law and Population Health Amir Attaran, writing in the Harvard Public Health Review, asks, but for the Games, would anyone recommend sending an extra 500,000 visitors into Brazil right now? An estimated 500,000 foreigners are expected to be in Brazil for the Games in August. In February, the World Health Organization declared Zika a global health emergency, and Brazil has been among the most affected countries by the disease that has been linked to birth defects known as microcephaly and possibly Guillain-Barré syndrome, a disease of the nervous system in adults. But the medical director of the International Olympic Committee said there is no justification for canceling or delaying the Games, and he also expressed confidence the situation in Brazil will improve. Infectious diseases expert Sanjaya Senanayake of the Australian National University tells VOA's Victor Beattie that calling off the Games at this point is unreasonable.
Even if there wasn't Zika virus, the Zika virus mosquito would still be there in Brazil, and dengue and chikungunya are two other serious infections that that mosquito could transmit. Second of all, while it is true that a large number of people descending onto Brazil in such a short period of time for the Olympics would increase the risk of people taking Zika back to their home countries, the same does apply for the periods outside the Olympics. So what's been happening up till now during the Zika outbreak and what will happen after the Olympics? Thousands of people must have been traveling in and out of Brazil with Zika being taken back. I think what it comes down to is there is a risk of taking Zika back to your own country, and people have to make an individual risk assessment.
This apparently is not the first public health official to call for the Games to be postponed. Apparently the World Health Organization, which issued its own global health emergency in February on Zika, it doesn't seem to be that concerned.
Even though there are so many people going for the Olympics, there are people going before and after, and those people will take Zika. So if you're going to ban the Olympics, you should just ban travel to Brazil, which I don't think is reasonable. I mean, you have to feel sorry for Brazil. They've also got issues with political instability, with the impeachment. One of their international football players, Rivaldo, has actually gone public and asked people not to travel to Brazil because of the fear of violence. So it is a difficult time for Brazil at the moment.
At the same time, the health ministry in Brazil said on Wednesday the number of confirmed and suspected cases of microcephaly associated with Zika was down from more than 5,200 suspected cases in early May.
We know at some stage, if there isn't a vaccine available, that people will develop natural immunity to the infection in countries like Brazil because people are getting infected. But I think there's still a long way to go. And we've, of course, had a study in mice that has been released in Nature showing that mice infected with Zika virus will have offspring that develop microcephaly, which is further proof that Zika is associated with this birth defect.
A WHO spokesman said travelers to the Olympic Games in Rio should take precautions against mosquitoes, and pregnant women should consult with their doctors before traveling there. Coming up on VOA's International Edition, one pop singer has had enough with fans taking photos of him. But first, doctors in the Pakistani city of Quetta are puzzled by the illness of two school-aged brothers who have come to be known as the Solar Kids. The two lead a perfectly normal life during the day, but once the sun goes down, they become paralyzed. Muhammad Ishtak has more from Islamabad in this report, narrated by Rafford Rafael.
Doctors in an Islamabad medical center continue to treat 9-year-old Shwab Ahmed and 13-year-old Abdul Rashid, but still do not know what causes them to collapse as the sun sets.
There's a mysterious illness called solar kids, and what we have understood from research is that it happens when the neurotransmitters in the brain suffer imbalance.
The boy's father tells VOA that another of his sons suffers from the same illness.
I have six kids. Three are like this. They are fine in daytime and left paralyzed in the night. They can't eat or drink, nor get up or lay down. They suffer from this condition. But we are hopeful they will be okay by the grace of God.
So far, a team of 38 doctors has conducted more than 300 different tests.
Some are blood tests, some genetic testing. We've sent samples to universities abroad for axonal sequencing and also studying it here for proper peer review. And we have an ongoing collaboration with five countries. They examine kids through Skype, talk to them. We also do conference calls. They guide us a lot, and we're moving forward together on this.
Dr. Akram says doctors have also gone to the children's ancestral village to collect soil, water, and air samples, and have conducted tests on other members of the family. For Mohammed Ishtiaq in Islamabad, this is Robert Rafel, VOA News, Washington.
And there's some great video that goes with that story. You can see it online at our website, voanews.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Fame and popularity come with a price, and that could mostly be in the form of intrusions into a celebrity's personal life. Justin Bieber seems to be feeling that, as he's now telling fans he's tired of having his photo taken constantly. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us with pictures from both sides of the issue. Justin Bieber, a fan favorite. People love to see him, but not necessarily you'll see him in any photos with fans.
It's not exactly a two-way street these days, but I'm conflicted in my personal feelings about this, Jim. Let me give you a little background on this, on the continuing evolution of Justin Bieber's relationship with his fans. Back in March, Justin canceled all meet-and-greet sessions with fans on his Purpose World Tour, and some artists will have these sessions where fans can come backstage and pose for pictures with the artists. But Justin said no, these things left him exhausted to the point of depression. He posted a message on Instagram. He says the sessions left him drained and that the pressure of meeting people's expectations was just too much for him, so he was going to do away with them. And now he says he's done posing for photographs with fans as well. On Tuesday, Justin went on Instagram to say that his experiences with overbearing people who just stuck a camera phone in his face felt him feeling like a zoo animal and that he wants to keep his sanity. He says it's important to set boundaries and that he needs to do this to maintain his sanity because he lives a crazy life. Mm-hmm. He says the proliferation of camera phones necessitates this action. As you can imagine, some fans criticized him for this, and he actually posted back. He answered them, saying, look, years and years ago, it wasn't that easy to take pictures. I didn't have camera phones everywhere I turned, but the way it is now, I just feel trapped, and this needs to stop. I have to say that I'm sympathetic to him. My own personality, I could never be a public figure because this would drive me absolutely crazy. I'm not outgoing. I'm not fame-seeking. And one of the fans said, look, you know, just man up, because normal, you didn't sign up for a normal life. This comes with the territory. But I think what we have to remember with Justin Bieber is that he really was thrust into the spotlight by his mom. She started posting YouTube videos of him playing his guitar and singing when he was a little boy. He was 9, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he said, Mom, I want to be a star. Maybe he did want to be a star, but he was sort of thrust into that role. And after that, the hype machine went into overdrive and his albums became huge hits. And so here he finds himself at the age of 22, a veteran star, still finding himself, and he literally grew up on camera.
Let's face it, 22 is still a very young age, regardless of how much of a veteran he is at this point. I mean, there's a lot to adjust at that point in life.
Yeah, and I honestly feel like child stardom could be cruel and unusual punishment, because the artistic landscape is littered with these poor people who have been seriously damaged by growing up in the public eye.
Oh, and we have seen that through the decades, whether, you know, movie stars, television, music.
The child, Michael Jackson, the child kids. Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough.
Ray McDonald, he hosts our VOA Top 20 Countdown. You can also find him on Twitter
at Ray on the Hits.
Ray, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Listening to International Edition, you can always find us at our website any time of the day or night at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Howard Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States marks May 11th as Vietnam Human Rights Day to highlight our nation's support for promoting and protecting basic freedoms in that Southeast Asian nation. The U.S. and Vietnam recently concluded their 20th annual human rights dialogue in Washington. The meeting covered a wide range of human rights issues this year, including the importance of continued progress on legal reform efforts, rule of law, freedom of expression and assembly, religious freedom, labor rights, disability rights, LGBTI rights, multilateral cooperation, as well as individual cases of concern. U.S. Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, told the press that over the last year there was a continued overall decline in arrests and convictions for those peacefully expressing their religious and political views in Vietnam. However, Assistant Secretary Malinowski expressed concern about the recent uptick in convictions for peaceful dissent. He said the United States expressed our hope that this would be addressed and that some of the long-standing cases of concern would be resolved. Among the individual cases raised by the United States was Nguyen Van Dai, a prominent human rights lawyer who was arrested in December on charges of spreading anti-state propaganda. In 2007, Dai was sentenced to 4 years on a similar charge. Another high-profile case is that of blogger Nguyen Hu Vinh, who was sentenced to 5 years in prison in March for what authorities called abusing rights to freedom and democracy to infringe upon the interests of the state. During the last week in March, Vietnam convicted a total of 7 activists. According to the latest State Department Human Rights report at the end of 2015, Vietnam still held around 100 political prisoners. The United States continues to call for the unconditional release of all prisoners of conscience. Assistant Secretary Malinowski noted that the United States also continues to follow Vietnam's progress on legal reform necessary to bring Vietnamese laws in step with Vietnam's own constitution and international commitments. Vietnam's National Assembly is due this year to take up key laws, including the law on association, law on demonstrations, and law on religion, all of which could have a profound impact on human rights. Concern for the basic human rights of the Vietnamese people remains an integral part of the U.S.-Vietnam relationship.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.